You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Johnson.
From the AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com, and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's Downton Abbey After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Downton Abbey After Show.
Welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Bing is for doing, and we are here doing another AfterBuzz TV After Show for Downton Abbey Series 4, Episode 1. I'm John Comerford, and I'm joined in the studio by...
Tamara Berg. Hey, everybody. It's the UK,
absolutely,
of Downton Abbey.
Helming the booth for us is Marissa Serafini. Marissa, thank you very much for doing this for us.
Hello, everyone. I'm excited Downton Abbey's back.
I know. She's going to be so busy keeping us on track. She may not be able to chime in from time to time, but thank you very much. Anyway, okay. So I just want to briefly start off by saying how this thing was very well received in Britain. They had it, I guess, about 10 million viewers.
Yeah, I have the stats right here.
What are the stats?
The show drew an average audience of 9.5 million viewers, and that's almost 40% of the Sunday night viewing audience.
40%, that's amazing.
The peak viewing was 10.5 million viewers,
right.
But The X Factor actually beat out the show
its
entirety. But that's a huge, huge rating.
Huge.
And it is also the best ever UK viewing figures for a series opener.
Wow. Okay. And very well received. I was reading the reviews. Almost everybody was saying how much they liked it. Of course, they had the haters too. But overall, I think everybody was happy to have it back and anxious to see it. And I think somebody was talking about how it was such a great respite from the reality
of Sunday night.
Exactly. To
which
go
means
back
you're
in
going
time.
Back to work on Monday.
Exactly. To go back in time and enjoy Downton Abbey. So to get into this story now, obviously Mary has a big choice ahead of her, whether to choose the living or the dead. Nanny West gets sacked. But where I want to start off is where the show started off, which was the departure of Mrs. O'Brien.
Yes.
And sneaking off like a thief in the night, as Lord Grantham says. And it was great, too, because that's pretty much what she did.
The most hated Miss O'Brien.
I know. And even the way they shot it, everything was dark and everything. And she really did look like she was absconding or something like that, what was going on, and, you know, just skirting away.
Well, and granted, you know, part of it was probably that they didn't have the actress there. But
yeah.
But I also loved that, you know, we just saw feet underneath the bed.
Yes, just a glimpse of her leaving.
You know, a little swish of something
here,
and a shadow
exactly.
of something.
Yeah. And of
was
course,
very
that
effective.
And that sets off the whole thing for the episode. In terms, the next morning when, you know, of course,
word gets out.
When Anna turns on the light, she's not there, and then it becomes this whole thing. And I love the way they shot this. I like the way they really covered the house, and they showed the gossip just traveling through the household from upstairs to downstairs, all around. And I thought it was just beautifully choreographed.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, reminded me of – go ahead. You were going to say something?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, the opening shot of this episode was – normally we see the beautiful, majestic-looking Downton Abbey, right?
Daytime.
And here it was kind of – it was very dark in the shadows, almost looking like a, you know, a mystery to begin with.
A little foreboding.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, that is the darkness that has – kind of followed us into
because you know we are in mourning, so
exactly. So I just thought, you know, it was a different opening. I don't know if it's going to be the opening for.
Yeah,
it's probably not going to be the opening for the entire season.
No, and if you recall last series, I don't know if it was the final episode or, but I remember they had a new opening.
Yeah,
then
it
too.
Was the Christmas special.
Christmas special.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, so there was a new opening there.
Yeah. Also, can we just address for a second? This is the first time that AfterBuzz has done Downton Abbey to coincide with the UK airing of the show.
Right.
And
we usually have to wait until they air it in America.
Exactly. Wretched Americans. We have to wait.
So, yeah, this is the first time we were doing it to coincide. And looking forward to it and hoping that us Yankee interlopers will be well received by our cousins across the pond.
Cut us a little bit of slack. Yeah, I am a huge Anglophile.
Educate us when we make a mistake, but kindly.
Yeah, exactly. Bear with us. We're doing our best, and we love the show, and that's why we're here. So we're pretty excited about this.
So I thought, you know, before we get into Mrs. O'Brien's departure, this is 6 months after we left off with the death of Matthew. So that's why all the darkness and the mourning going on here. So Mrs. O'Brien scuttles off in the middle of the night. And when Anna finds her, and then the gossip travels through. And I know I've already talked about it, but I just love the way it just, followed the gossip. You just followed the gossip through the downtown.
That shot from above when word got out with the servants, it was.
They're in the main hall.
In that beautiful main hall.
Yeah.
And it was just great to see. It was really interesting, and you got a lot of the energy without hearing the words. And
right. You didn't need to hear the words. And also, it brought us right back. It reminded us why we liked the High Clerical. Oh, excuse me.
Downton Abbey.
Beg your pardon. Go ahead. You were going to say something?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I just really enjoyed that. I do want to remark that somebody was talking about, somebody made a comment about how they don't like to watch Downton Abbey as much anymore. So it could, because it's so clearly no longer shot at High Clere Castle, and that the production value has been lost because they're in the studio now. And I'm like, are you crazy? Did you not see that opening? That was not shot on some
studio
somewhere. That was seven there.
Now, downstairs is in a studio,
and
it always has been.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but upstairs is in High Clere Castle, mostly.
Okay, so let's get into the repercussions of Mrs. O'Brien leaving. So now they've got to find somebody else, and where are they going to look? And the way Cora was just so, devastated by this, and how could it happen, and how could Susan do this to me?
How could she not tell me?
Yes, exactly. And they're taking care of Rose, her daughter, at the same time.
Right. While Rose is under our roof.
I know.
She's highly indignant about that.
I know. And I was kind of surprised by it, too. But, of course, it was set up last series because, we saw how Mrs. O'Brien got along with Susan,
Lady Flincher,
I should say. Mm-hmm. And how they wanted to – well, obviously, Mrs. O'Brien had talked about how she would love to travel, and they were going to go to India and stuff, and so that's how that was all set up. So, anyway, but it was kind of shocking. Well, even more shocking than that it all happened was that Rose seemed to take responsibility for it, which seemed so out of character to me because Rose didn't really seem to care about anything.
Well, it was interesting when she walked in the breakfast room; they were talking about it. She walked in and said, "It's all right, I know." And mm-hmm. Lord Grantham, "No, it isn't all right."
Exactly.
Apparently, it's really devastating to lose a servant like that in that time, but.
Without notice or warning or anything like that. And I guess that's the thing that they really
warned. Well, and I know, it's someone who lives with you and takes care of your most intimate issues.
But do you think it was that so much, or was it because that Lady Flincher was the one that stole her, basically? Because I think that's the thing that was most upsetting.
Yes,
so how could
that
happen?
Was more upsetting, for sure.
Because she just extended such a huge courtesy to bring Rose in.
Right.
And this is how it was repaid.
Yeah, that is a betrayal. There's no question.
So that was anyway, more than anything, I was just wondering, do you think Rose has got something else? I mean, she doesn't know who she eventually found.
Right. So let's go to that first.
All right.
So Rose decides she's going to put a card up in the local shop.
And isn't willing to even tell for what. Remember, the woman asks, who it's for, what position, and she doesn't even say.
Does it matter? I thought that was a little bit odd.
It was odd.
You're going to put the card in and go, I need someone to call me for something.
Yeah, but she wasn't willing to tell this person. But I'm going,
she has to walk out and read the window.
I know, but so already I'm going, okay, what's up her sleeve why is she doing this?
Right, exactly. There's some subterfuge going on.
Yes,
there.
Exactly. And we already know Rose is, let's say she's fast and loose with the truth. Can
mm-hmm.
we say that?
Mm-hmm.
Based on where we found her in the jazz clubs.
Mm-hmm.
So, and how Matthew had to save her.
Absolutely. Yes.
Actor rather than the character. So, she puts the card out, and of course, who would find it? Buzz? Edna. Of
Edna.
All people.
Mm-hmm. Edna.
Edna, yes.
Beautiful, interesting Edna.
But isn't this great? Because when we first learned that Siobhan was going to be leaving the show, I'm going, who are they going to get to fill that void of that kind of negativity and devilishness, I guess. What
right.
That? And then when you saw her, I went, oh, perfect.
A little conniving bit.
Yes, exactly. What an operator.
Right.
So she's going to fill in nicely, I think. I mean, we saw her last season, series, trying to get together with Branson and the trouble that caused. And I thought it was just great how that all came around. Because we know that she's up to no good to some fashion. She's even lying about whether or not she's actually staying with her aunt or helping her aunt.
Right.
Because Cora kind of catches her a little bit when they have their little interview at the tea that they were having.
Mm-hmm.
And you, okay, so what's up? You know, she's supposedly, she says, oh, I've gone away. I've got some training. I can do hair now. So now I'm a, you know,
I'm a ladies'
exactly,
maid.
Exactly. I'm fascinated. So this is going to be the nice twist here, because she's going to go ahead.
Right. Well, and I just think it's so interesting that in that conversation, it's Rose and Lady Grantham, yeah, and Edna sitting there talking. Well, of course, I'll have to speak to Mrs. Hughes. Oh, as it happens, I've got a perfect reference for Mrs. Hughes. So it's all working out just right for her.
Yeah, and it's so perfect, too perfect, actually. How is it, you know? And I'm wondering, okay, Rose doesn't know her. I mean, there's no indication that she does.
Right. So, but there's something going
on. Something is going on.
Right.
And I think they did a really good job of like not telling us, so that we go, okay, this is good. So,
unless she does know.
Yeah, but I mean, why? If she knew, why would she put the card out? Wouldn't she just go get her and go, Edna, here's what we're going to do.
Oh, yeah, that's a good
point. So there's no point of putting the card out. But it seems like Edna and Rose have separate agendas going on.
That happen to be complementary.
Yeah, they just happen to work in. So that'll be interesting. Because I really don't believe that Rose is just doing this because she feels responsible.
No.
I have a hard time believing that.
No. Maybe part of it is that she's thinking that Edna, because she's young and pretty, will kind of be on Rose's side, you know, because Rose is always trying to get away with something.
Yeah, maybe she wants somebody to, you know, be the ear.
Cover for her.
Yeah, or something. Yeah, it could be. I mean, that may be enough. But what's Edna's agenda? Because she clearly wants to get back into Down.
I think Edna's agenda is...
You think it's Branson still?
Branson.
Really?
I do. So?
Okay, all right. All right, well, I can believe that. I mean, because she was very interested before.
I'm very much liking living at Downton Abbey, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But and even better was the little tête-à-tête with the three Mrs.
Right.
Hughes, Carson, and
right.
Branson.
So they're all sitting like in a darkened room, trying to figure out how to deal.
What are we
going to
do now?
Right.
Yeah, she's coming back. And we put her there because you made me give her that reference, Mrs. Hughes tells Branson, and for good reason, because he didn't want her to lose a gig. And then it's Carson that comes up with the placation to say, okay, well, we'll just have to deal with it. We're going to let her stay, and we're just going to make sure she behaves. Right. That's going
to
happen.
Right. And Mrs. Hughes, this sounds like a ticking time bomb to me.
Yeah. And it clearly,
me too.
Yeah. Signpost. Yeah. Clearly going to be a ticking time bomb.
But I don't know. Do you think that Tom, I guess we call him Tom, let's just call him Branson. Mm-hmm. Do you think Branson is going to succumb to her womanly wiles?
No, I don't. For many reasons, but we'll get into those when we talk about
predictions.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I don't think that'll be it. But I think that's what will have her turn even more evil, because he won't succumb to her wiles.
Oh.
So now she'll be a woman scorned. I came all the way back here, and you're not going to follow through on this? Are you kidding me? And then she's going to make everybody's life hell.
That'll be good.
Yeah, that'll be nice. That'll be
she's nice. She's got a look to her, you know, physically. Yeah. Her look is so interesting that, you know, she could easily go angelic or evil.
Oh.
And so, I mean, just in my mind, because she's so pretty, but she has those kind of pointy eyes that could, you know, if you accentuate.
And for those who are just listening, Tammy,
I'm going like this.
I'm not exactly sure how to describe. She's making pointy eyes.
Well, she just has one of those faces. You don't instantly look at her and go, angel. You go, there's something else going on there. So
the devil within.
Right. I'm looking forward to what Edna's going to be bringing to Downton Abbey.
Yeah.
I mean, we've lost a villain, so
we've
got
to replace
it
with somebody. And, you know, so who will that be? And here it is. Damn Edna rather than Dame Edna. That's how I'm going to call her. Damn
Edna.
So,
good one, John.
All right. So that's how.
Hashtag damn Edna.
There you go. All right, so that takes us over to Mary, because obviously Mary is the one that pretty much, well, her arc, I should say, is the overriding arc for this particular episode, because she's the one dealing most traumatically and most deeply with Matthew's death, of course, as you would expect. And we start her off, the first time we see her, we start her off with Anna, and, you know, Anna's trying to get her ready and dressed, and she's all in black, and Anna offers her the lilac shawl or
lavender
covering, whatever it might have been. And she says, no, where's the black one? So, and right there, she's completely in her mourning and in a weird way, and I'm going to say this and it's not going to make any sense, she's happy in her mourning, meaning that she has no interest in doing anything but grieve and mourn. And even to the point where she's just ignoring the baby to most degree.
Right. She's very resigned to it, it feels like to me.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm not going on a world tour.
Right. And yeah. just, you know, as much as it's interesting because she talks about it later and we'll talk about the scene more with Maggie Smith. But she says, you know, any kind of life and warmth that was in me
is gone.
Matthew saw is just
the softness
gone.
That he saw in me has melted away and dried up. Yeah. And it may never have existed to begin with. It might have been only in his imagination. And I thought, wow, that's where she is. The idea, the thought that anything that was good about you in some, because I think that's where she is, anything that might have been light or good about her was only seen through his eyes. And that since those eyes can no longer see, it doesn't exist. And therefore, I'm just this cold and dead.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. So, she's a zombie.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I've, you know, because they talk about how cold she was and all that other stuff.
Well, and she and Matthew talked about that in series three about how, and actually I think it was the Christmas special from series two where he, maybe not, but where he was proposing to her and they were deciding to be together. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, in the run up to their wedding, you know, she kept saying, you know, sort of to paraphrase, I love who I am as you see me.
Exactly. Yeah.
And of course that's what love is, kind of, you know, getting to see yourself through the eyes of one who loves you. And the idea that could never return because he can't return. I could see that happening.
Yeah. I mean, and that's just, she, I don't think she can see a future for herself, even though she has a son desperately in need of a mother.
Yeah.
But you know, the nanny's taking care of that, which we'll talk about the nanny in a bit.
Oh,
yeah.
Nanny.
So that part was difficult to watch because I'm going, you have a son, but you know, I guess if you have people taking care of the son and you can't even take care of yourself or even see yourself being worthy of it, it doesn't matter.
Right.
But I wanted, I'm just like, somebody shake her.
Well, but also she brings off that line, you poor little orphan.
Yeah. She, in her
for
mind.
For George.
Yeah.
And so she's passing along her pain to her child who doesn't even know it yet and endowing him with this great loss.
Yes. And it was oddly echoed in the fact that, you know, because she's saying basically she doesn't exist. But even in the eyes of the law, she barely exists because now that Matthew is dead, it everything that Matthew was about kind of bypasses her and goes over to George. So she doesn't even have position.
Right.
As a lady.
Right.
And they kept hitting that. They rang that bell a few times. And I know that's how it was done back then. But it's still shocking when you think about it because, you know, it all went to George and she was, you know, and even Lord Grantham, when he was talking about her, you know, Cora was saying, you know, Branson was saying he would like her to be part of the playing, and she's not a player in this.
Right.
Lord Grantham is saying, when Cora was bringing it up, he said, look, it's not, she was never a part of this anyway.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is. And I'm going to have to take care of it because Matthew and I were partners, and now I'm going to take care of the kid. And she doesn't have a say in it, basically.
Yeah.
I'm just going. So no, anywhere where she looks, she kind of is just kind of pushed to the side in some degree, in her mind anyway. I don't necessarily think
and,
that.
You know, we are in the 20s now, and so life is changing. We saw life changing a little bit as the, you know, as Matthew and Lord Grantham retooled the estate and how, you know, things are changing. We had a mixer.
Yes,
literally,
yes,
an electric mixer come in.
I love how they keep bringing every once in a while they'll bring in a newfangled object.
But so there's this new attitude about women and their rank and possibility in the world as well.
And Lady Edith was talking about that. Go ahead.
Nope.
Well, because I know we're going to talk to Lady Edith later, but just because you brought up that point, she was talking about how to meet Michael Gregson, you know, in public.
Right.
And how it was just that shocking. Couldn't have done this 5 years ago. I couldn't even done this 5 years ago. And then if we compare how Mary was looking at all in that black, that long, heavy black, and, you know, always long sleeves, the whole thing. And here Lady Edith is stepping out in this flapper outfit, and you could actually see a slit in her dress. I'm going, hello, before you, the ankles were covered, and here we are, the roaring 20s beginning, and we got a slit in her dress. She's looking great. I mean, that's a big change between the two. And again, furthering where we are in the times.
Right. You know, one of the other things that I appreciate about the show is that we do have Lady Cora coming in.
Right.
Giving, because this show is such a huge hit in the U.S., I think almost bigger than it is in the UK. Just from the popularity standpoint, right. Everyone's talking about it. Everybody's, you know, constantly excited about Downton Abbey. I love that there's a little bit of an infusion of the American sense, mm-hmm. partly to help us understand. And also this thing about property.
Right.
Where, you know, it, forever it has all passed through the men and women are left penniless. Yep. And, you know, Cora is the one who brought the American money into the family in the first place. And so it's interesting to see the counterpoint and how the attitudes are different and how the law is different and to allow there to be a discussion there. Mm-hmm. Because if it was an entirely British population within the show, that conversation wouldn't come up as much.
Happen.
And so I really like that we can, that we can see that and discuss it and debate it a little bit in this context.
That's great. Why, and even Cora was bringing it up when they were talking about it. I thought that was terrific and, you know, just to help us along for no other reason, but it also allows you to explain what was going on at the time because not everybody knew.
Right.
But let's get back to Mary a little bit more about, because we see that Lord Grantham is protecting his daughter as he should, as the father and everything.
Shielding her is the word he used.
And not letting her, you know, wanting her to heal and not even, I mean, the way it was so condescending to some degree. I'm going, geez, for crying out loud. But, you know, Mary was actually appreciative of it.
She was fine with it.
She's like, you know what? I don't want to deal with it. I'm going to resign myself. I'm going to, you guys deal with it all. Doesn't he want to? But, of course, Branson doesn't want to, because if anybody should understand it, Branson should. He knows what it's like to lose a spouse and lose a great love. In fact, when he was talking with, that was one of the best lines.
Oh,
my
gosh.
He was talking with Lord Grantham. And Lord, you know, Branson says he loved her very much and with great love comes great misery when one of you dies, and Grantham is so oblivious.
Right. And Branson's sitting there, dude.
Exactly.
I got it.
Yeah. But that was the thing about this episode that I was also saying. Branson clearly should have been the one to help in some degree, and he was trying to because he was obviously realizing that you need to get back in the game here. It's been 6 months and we need just take an interest in anything. From his own pain, he was realizing that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he had his daughter to take care of. So
right.
He was in, but there wasn't a lot of talk about that.
About Sybil being gone?
Yeah. And I was kind of shocked by that. I mean, I know that Mrs. Hughes talked to Lady Grantham about it, saying if anybody should be able to talk to you. A daughter about Louis, and, you know, Mrs. Grantham, Lord Grantham, no, sorry,
Lady Grantham
says, you know, I don't think so, because if I had lost an only daughter, I'd be a wreck.
Right. But I would have died.
Exactly. And I'm going, but why, you know, I just thought that was a misstep for me. I wanted that explored more, because it was almost as if they kind of just forgot that Sybil had died.
Well, but it's been a while since Sybil died.
I know, but how do you forget your own child dying? And they barely even touched upon it. And I thought that would be the thing that you would go to. And I know Lord Grantham forgot it, and then he realizes his mistake with Branson, and he says, oh, geez, I'm so sorry. But I'm going to – wouldn't anybody – look, if there's anybody that would understand this, it's him. He's been through it, and it wasn't that long ago. It was two, three
years. Right, so you're saying it's not so much that they didn't mention it, it's that they didn't explore how Branson was connected to losing a spouse at the bloom of their love and all of that.
They had the argument here with Lord Grantham saying, hey, look, just let her deal with it in her own way, in her own time. She can't just protect the crap out of her so she's shielded by everything and doesn't experience life. And then you have the other argument, which on the other side was
get out and come back to life.
Exactly, get out and come back to life, which I totally agree with. And obviously that won out. But there wasn't anybody just really talking about, you know, look, we've been here before.
Yeah.
We know how to help these people through this.
Right.
I mean, and I just was going, how could you – that's to me was a misstep.
Okay.
But anyway.
I could support you on that argument.
All right. But so obviously Branson is getting nowhere with Grantham. So he decides to enlist some help. And who does he go to? But Carson. And I thought that when he goes in to see Carson.
Daddy number two.
Exactly. And I'm getting nowhere with him. But who else? But – obviously, Carson as daddy number two really has the ear of Lady Mary.
Yes, he does.
But I thought the meeting between Carson and Branson the first time was good.
Yes.
Because, you know, Carson still has kind of some animus there and some just difficulty with Tom Branson because he's...
When he called her Mary.
Yeah, Mary,
I mean Lady Mary.
Lady Mary, all that kind of stuff. So they're carrying that along, which is nice because Carson's not likely to change too quickly. But he does see the value in speaking to Mary because he knows that Mary needs to be moved along. She needs to be start to heal and to, you know, move on with life because she has a child to take care of.
Yes.
But I was so stunned by how I thought it was great, the scene between he and Carson when she decides she goes, well, in some sense, goes off on him because he's overstepped.
dresses him down was what I read.
Oh,
she just dressed him down. Right. Who the heck do you think you are?
But you know, it's but my fault.
But it was so much more of a demeaning way she said
it. It's terrible.
It's my fault for allowing you to think.
I know. It was
which
shocking.
Which felt like so much more sickening to me as I was listening to it.
Yeah, I was always watching. I was like, this feels awkward.
Right.
I felt really bad for Carson. And it was just, and just, it was, she just seemed, that was the cold Mary and the heartless one that we knew in the beginning.
Yep.
It's like, wow, she's back. Damn.
Right.
That was terrible.
Right. But I loved that the moment before, so he took it.
Yeah.
He heard her say, oh, no, you don't.
Yeah.
And walked out. And just before he left, he said, you're letting yourself be defeated.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry if I have to say this or if I'm overstepping
my
bounds.
It's a lapse for me to say.
Overstepping my mark or whatever it is. But someone has to say it.
Which is the thing that you wanted because you wanted somebody to shake her.
I thought that was incredibly courageous
it was.
Of him.
And I honestly thought that the way he was looking and the way she was talking to him, I thought he was just going to
leave it.
And I thought it was great that he turned and said, no, no, no. And just let it hang there.
Right. Which just shows me that it's not about him in that moment. Mm-hmm. It was about her because as uncomfortable as it was for him to turn back and say, I think that you are letting yourself being defeated. That's a difficult conversation to have with Mary. Mm-hmm. And he took the courage and, you know, gave it back to her and said, look, here's the reality of what I think about this.
Yeah.
I'm going to do what you say. Because you're my fake daughter.
and it's my position.
And it's my position.
To shut up and not do anything.
As servant to shut up. But as number two dad, I have to say
it. That's it. Mm-hmm. And thankfully you did.
Yeah.
So, but it still kind of wasn't enough. Because you know, later on we have the dowager.
Oh my God. Once again, Maggie Smith.
Knocks it out of the park. Yeah. Because I just loved that scene. I thought it was, for me, it was the best scene. I mean, there was a lot of scenes that I really enjoyed. I enjoyed the whole episode.
Gosh.
I was really happy to have it back. But yeah, that scene. And I thought it was great, you know, because they obviously had the scene at the dinner table where, you know, Mary flips out and decides, I got to, you know, leave me alone. My husband, don't you know what it's like? And she just storms out. And Dowager says, okay. And Lord Grantham says the idea, like, see, this is what I was afraid of. And don't you agree, Mother? No.
No. No.
I can't win with his mom. No way.
Well, and that's one of the things that we love about Maggie Smith's character is because she is so entrenched in the tradition.
Right.
She's so prepared to staunchly defend where they have always been. And then she continually comes up and surprises us and goes, you know what? No to that.
Yeah. And then that when she has that scene when the Dowager and Mary have that scene together. And I just, the whole thing with Mary, you know, just lying in bed and being untouched.
Half dead.
She almost looked like she was in a coffin. Mm-hmm. She's wearing the black and the whole thing.
Yep.
Dead eyes, the whole thing. And, you know, she's saying, oh, you're supposed to want me to apologize for acting badly. And, of course, Dowager says, why would I care? I'm not your governess. I'm your grandmother. And, you know, when she says, well, what difference would that make? Because, and then it was the way that Maggie chose to say, I'm your grandmother because I love you. And the hesitation she had, it was almost like she
has never said it.
Or if she has, it's been very few and far between. But the way she did it, then you realize the weight of that because she took her time to say that because it's not something they say often.
No.
And then the way that Mary, I should say Michelle, the actress, took that. And let that moment sit and then responded as like, oh, wow, that was huge. I thought that was great.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see the touch at the end and everything because I don't imagine they're not a touch.
There's not a lot of that happening in that family, no.
But you could see that she started that, and that's where, of course, they had the conversation about the softness in her and
right.
maybe all gone. But then you see that moment there with the grandmother, and you forget for a second the dowager, and you forget who Lady Mary is. You kind of just see the grandmother trying to help her granddaughter in that moment. And I thought, okay, well, there's some light there. You could see that there is some softness still in her and that somebody else sees it as well.
Mm-hmm.
But even seeing that, you know that the dowager realizes she's not – she even says, you may not be that kind of mother that Matthew might have thought you would be, but that doesn't mean you can't be a great mother.
Yeah, because there are many kinds of good mothers.
Mother, to hopefully give her a view of the possibility that she has as a mother and the effect she could have on George.
Yeah.
So, anyway, very effective. And then isn't it right after that she goes back into the stairwell and then decides to go back in the stairwell is where she's headed upwards and she stops and then she decides that she needs to go talk to Carson and apologize.
I don't know if it happens right after.
I'm pretty sure it's right after.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to talk about that because the stairwell is very well used in this particular episode.
Yes.
You know, the first time we see Mary coming down the stairwell in this episode, Edith is going up the stairwell, and
mm-hmm.
you know, she's got the Valentine card from Michael Gregson and stuff like that, and they meet
right.
on the stairwell, and then it's one of those classic sister scenes between the two of them.
I got frostbite on that moment.
it's like, really? Do they hate each other that much, or they just don't know each other? I mean, they know each other. I don't mean that. What I mean is, they just seem so awkward, like they can't ever have a regular conversation.
I know. Well, it reminded me of the moment before Edith's wedding where they were taking pictures outside the church.
Yeah, yeah, let's pretend
at least, because this is a beautiful day, let's at least for this moment pretend like we like each other. It's like, and you know, I've talked about this before, I love my sisters very much. I'm very close with my sisters. And so the idea of them not only not being close, but being a million miles apart mm-hmm. from each other and having that, you know, just icy mm-hmm. chasm between them strange to me. But I mean, I know I'm sure it's real and lots of people have it in their families.
Yeah, we did. But I just like the way it was shot. I like the way that the way they were costumed. I mean, just everything about that particular scene was wonderful.
And then Edith goes up. Enjoy your day, Mary says, or whatever it is.
Have a happy time.
Have a happy time.
Yeah, have a happy time.
And then when
she turns on, gets to the landing, she's just staring at the bottom of the stairs, the foot of the stairs, and you have this memory. And that angle shot, I don't know if it's an exact duplicate of the other scene from Series 3 when she and Matthew are down there and they're professing, or she's professing his
Probably,
love.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's Series 2, actually.
Series 2, I beg your pardon. But it just evoked enough, you know, because when I first saw the shot, I'm going, what is it? Why is it? Oh.
Yeah. I knew it instantly. When I saw it, I knew it right away because I remembered that so.
Yeah.
Vividly when we watched
it. It was such a memory of what was, what could have been between she and Matthew, what was, and, you know, hopefully what would have been if had he not died. And it was just, the look on her face was just devastating that she's just coming down the stairs and she's reminded of that. And I just thought that was great.
Heart-wrenching.
It was heart-wrenching. And also I thought it was interesting that they chose that same stairwell. Of course, which other stairwell would you take? But why shoot it on the stairwell when she, after the Dowager says all this, and she has that moment on the stairwell where she's heading up now and she's making the decision, like, you know what? This is the time when she wants to apologize. Because obviously whatever Dowager said got to her.
Yeah.
And she realized there was something here. So I just think it was interesting that they chose the two stairwells, you know, and the way they did it.
What kind of came to me at this moment when she was getting ready to go talk to Carson, and I don't mean this literally, I mean it figuratively, that, you know, there's nowhere to go but up from here, you know, because she was in such a terrible place, and obviously literally she went downstairs.
Obviously, clearly.
But that was that sense that I had. Yeah. There was a possibility of rising from where she was.
And
at the time.
For me, I took it as this: is before I can move up, I have to acknowledge that and make amends for this moment because I realize I was wrong here. And until I do that, I can't move forward. That's right. That's right.
I think that's good.
So yeah. And it was, but you know, I don't know. There was a lot of people talking about that scene between Mary and Carson. Where talk about overstepping the bounds. She's crying and he's holding her and stuff. I go, whoa, hey, hello.
Oh, good Lord.
He's just a servant. He shouldn't be doing that.
I cannot watch another person cry without crying. And I can't obviously even think about it.
She's starting to
tear up right now. Uh-huh. I mean, it could be the most nasty person in the world. If they start shedding real tears, I burst into tears myself.
Yeah.
But so he says, does this mean that you've decided to return to the land of the living? Yeah. If so, I'm glad.
Yeah. And that, of course, is coming back up what the Dowager said. Not that they had a scene together, but the Dowager said you have a very clear choice ahead of you. You can either choose the living or choose the dead.
Yeah.
So.
But that moment of her just crying, sobbing, you know, just finally letting it all go was incredibly touching. And it was the opportunity for us to see that there is, you know, there's life after Matthew.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that, because you know she's not going to be touchy-feely and all warm fuzzy and everything.
Right, but we do also know, you know, spoiler alert, it's not like it's a big surprise.
Yeah,
they're going to be, you know, they keep talking about, they've been talking about the casting for Lady Mary's love interest. So there was going to be some romance coming in. So, you know, we know that's coming, and it was, but it was just nice to see that, sorry to use the cliche, but see the ice finally break and her go through it. Because that's not how people dealt with grief back then.
And well, for me, when I saw all that, I said, okay, so George might have a mother after all. So he might have a shot here. So
Prince George,
of course. Do you think that was an accident? They named him Prince? That Julian Fellowes decided to name him George? Like, what do you think?
I love it. I don't think it was an accident at all. Nothing's accidental in television anymore, I mean, it was kind of filmmaking.
You know, it's like a nod to the young prince or what?
I think it's sweet. I think it's cute. And I think it's a little like, you know, it's an Easter egg. It's a little of those.
So it's just bringing the future into the past, so to speak?
I guess. Okay. I just think it's a fun little Easter egg. That's all I think it is.
Okay. So, but it's good to see that that's come through.
Oh, and then Mary's last scene. Sorry, I forgot about Mary's last scene.
They finally, you know, Mary's been saying, no, I don't want to be involved with this. Branson wants her, and Grantham saying, no, leave her alone, leave her alone. Mm-hmm. And finally at the luncheon, she, you know, at the last minute she shows up, and of course she's no longer wearing the black. She is wearing the lilac and the blue or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And we see that, okay, she really has. She had a presence there, didn't
Yes.
And Branson, of course, gives up his chair for her, which I thought was a nice little touch. But I just like the way she was comported herself in that moment and asking questions. And, you know, they kind of just pulled away on that. So, you know, okay, she's back.
Right. So now, let me ask you just to speculate on this. How do you think Mary will be as a presence for herself and her family and the estate? I mean, well, she's kind of a modern gal, but she's not as plugged in as Edith.
No, but I think because she's obviously highly intelligent, and she even said, you know, I have ideas.
She did. She did.
And, you know, when she wanted her way with Matthew, she knew how to go about getting it.
You're right.
And so I hope they're going to turn her into this tycoon kind of thing where, you know, she's a formidable force, like her grandmother.
And her mother.
Both of her grandmothers,
well,
so to speak. Yeah, her mother, too. But her mother's way more genteel than I would think anybody would accuse Mary of being. I think Mary's way more forthright.
I agree.
And forthcoming, I should say. And forthright. But that's what I want to see, because, you know, then I think you're going to get a lot of pushback, you know, not only from her father, but even from her grandmother, either one. But I think that will be great, because then it will have some nice conflict and all that other stuff. But I think you'll see her trying to grow into that, you know, fighting against those kinds of laws.
Conventions.
Yeah, and not necessarily that she's going to fight a law, but the fact that she doesn't have a say in her son's or in her husband's inheritance, and it's going right to her son. I mean, that kind of thing. I think she's going to come up against that all the time, and I think she's formidable in that regard, and I think she'll step into that with great fervor, and I think that'd be fun.
You were going to say verve, too, weren't you?
I was going to say verve, but that didn't sound right.
It's the 20s.
Yeah, exactly.
There could be vervy things happening.
Yeah, we could. All right. Well, we got to move on to other stories.
Oh gosh, really do. My goodness, I didn't see the time. Yeah. Okay, let's talk about Nanny West.
Let's talk Nanny West. We bring in Nanny West, and oh, she looks like such a wonderful nanny, right?
Yeah.
You know, one of those classic British nannies. Not as classic as, shall we say, McPhee or Poppins or anything like that, but she looked like a great little.
She's nice and round, which
round.
We like in our nannies.
She seems very cheery, and you know. Of course, for whatever reason, it doesn't want Thomas to touch the children at all.
She and Thomas just don't get along.
Oh my God!
I'm wondering,
does she know about Thomas? Has she heard about Thomas being such a bad guy?
Right.
Or I'm going because you didn't see her being that way. Well, that's not true, because when Isabel wanted to go see the children, she wouldn't even
let her in.
And I go, wait a minute,
I'm grandma. I get to do whatever I want.
Exactly. The nanny can tell you when you can see the kids and when you can't. You're the grandmother. What? That seems so odd to me.
Yeah.
And I'm going, that's legit? They can do that?
I guess so. Apparently
I can't believe the grandma's...
The nanny.
Screw you. You're a servant. Get out of here.
Nanny with the iron fist or something.
Yeah. But anyway, so does not take a liking to Thomas. Doesn't want him to touch. In fact, tries to order him around and stuff. And of course, Thomas does not take a liking to that.
Right.
I love the scene downstairs after Nanny West tried to order him the first time.
About the eggs?
I don't know what she ordered him, but I'm just talking about when Thomas went downstairs and she tried to give me orders and everything.
Right.
Bates said, what, she mistake you for a servant? He is at the center. Well, don't tell him that. There's too much of a shock to
great.
Him.
Great. That was hilarious.
Yeah, it was. And it was one of that little nice repartee you get downstairs. But right. I thought it was also interesting, just a little moment there between Thomas and Mr. Bates, because, you know, he still, Bates kind of regrets, well, I don't know, he has second thoughts about whether or not he should have saved him. Because he's the one that saved Thomas from getting sacked.
Right.
By, you know, letting the,
right.
the words out to Mrs. O'Brien.
Mrs. O'Brien.
About soap. Mm-hmm. He just said the word soap.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and I'm just thinking, okay, they're keeping that alive, not only just for nice conflict, but it's probably going to come back to bite him, too.
Well, I just also think it was interesting that Thomas was, you know, he was such a villain for so
yeah.
long.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of last series, he sort of relinquished his villainry.
And took a beating for James.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then, but now he's back.
Now he's back.
We've missed his villainry.
Yeah, exactly.
So I guess.
But in a weird way, he was just kind of snarky, but she was snarky back. So he didn't really do anything that was villainous or, you know, underhanded
right.
in some sense. Obviously, he pulled Cora aside, excuse me, Lady Grantham aside and said, I don't think Nanny West is doing right by the children and leaving them to their own devices and all that kind of stuff. So he plants a seed, but with good reason. Now, I don't think Thomas knew anything.
No, I don't think so either.
Other than she was being a bitch to him.
Right, right.
So I was going.
He didn't like the new girl.
It's not like he's and prescient she, about these things.
And that, she yeah. was bitchy.
Yeah.
So he decided, you know what?
But, you know, it was just fortuitous that it proved to be true, and now he's going to.
Boy, he lucked out
on
that one.
Oh, yeah. Now he's looking like a hero to Cora.
Well, it's like finding the dog.
Yeah,
when
exactly.
When he, you know, hit the dog and then found the dog.
Yeah, but
found
this, yeah, but this one, I mean, this is just luck.
It was.
So.
Yeah, it was great luck for
yeah.
him.
Yeah, but I that was one of the more shocking moments of this particular episode.
I was stunned.
Yeah,
I had to rewind and watch it again.
Oh, did you?
I was so surprised.
Okay.
Yeah, I was. I literally went. I did. So right. So she's
Nanny West is
Nanny West is going on and you know
Lady Grantham is overhearing from the
just
hallway.
Listening, waiting, you know, listening to just hear how lovely mm-hmm. it's gonna be between Nanny West and the baby.
Or just checking on her because you know, Thomas had already told her. Keep an eye on her.
Right. You so. Chauffeur's daughter. You go back to sleep, you wicked little crossbreed.
Crossbreed. Whoa. It's like, what? What?
What?
That wonderful, cute little roundy nanny said that?
Right.
That was not a Mary Poppins or McPhee
It was not an Annie McPhee moment.
Shocking.
No, it wasn't.
And then the way she I was just playing a game. What
it's
game
a
are
joke.
You playing? What's the game? How to be a racist? How to be an elitist? What's the game? You know, so.
Well, I loved Cora coming in and just taking over.
Oh, yeah,
and
that was good.
You know, she is not to be with these people. She is sacked. She is out. Get her out of here.
Yeah.
And your values have no place in a civilized home.
I choose not to discuss this, only to say that you. Yeah, that was great.
Right.
Oh, way to go, Cora. Coming to the rescue.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of, you know, again, it's really satisfying. I had no idea. That was a great turn because I had no idea that's what they were going to do with this Nanny West. I thought, okay, brought in a new character and a nice foil for Thomas. That's great. And then, boom, just to have this happen. I was like, whoa, that was just a shocker. And then she's gone.
Right.
Just, that's it. Out. Okay.
Right.
Interesting. So we got a lot of upheaval.
Again,
people coming in. Yeah, we got to get a new lady. We've got that with Damon. Now they got to get a new nanny. And so that'll be, how is that going to affect everything? So we are getting some new blood coming into the,
mm-hmm.
so there we go. That's fun. But the whole storyline with the nanny was just, it was fun. That was fun.
It was right. Well, it was really shocking.
It was
really shocking, and I loved that about it.
Yeah. But it was kind of weird when, you know, she was still holding the baby, and you know, Lady Grantham was talking to her. I'm going, geez, please put that baby down. I was afraid she was going to do something to the kid. Yeah.
Oh, my.
A little scary to me for a second there. So, all right. I want to move on to a couple of the other things.
We got to burn through
this. Yeah, we have to burn through. Because I love the Mrs. Hughes and the Carson storyline. So Carson gets this message, this note from, you know, Grieg, an old friend from the theater days.
Right.
And he has no interest. He crumples it up, throws it on the ground. And, of course, Mrs. Hughes just exactly, not minding her own business as she should. But, you know, she reads it, of course. And then that sets off the whole thing to find find out why this is happening and how we can help the guy. Go ahead.
So interesting. You used to sing and dance with him.
What? I mean, the only time I heard him singing was that other episode when they found out Mrs. Hughes was going to be okay.
Right.
And he was really singing there. That was kind of the first time we saw him joyful.
Right. Exactly.
Actually singing.
One of my Twitter followers had sent me a note that said she thought that Carson's mystery friend might be his brother. And I think they have a brotherly bond, but I don't think
it's brothers. Yeah, I don't think he's brother. I don't know why, because the way they refer to each other doesn't seem very brotherly, you know. But
you know, that can happen between siblings.
Well, I guess, but you know, they call each other by their last names and they don't have the same last name.
Right, so exactly. They don't have the same last name. So. But you know, you used to sing and dance together, and there was obviously something bad that happened between them.
So we got some backstory and some history there.
But so great of Mrs. Hughes to see the opportunity to help two people at once, possibly even three.
Yeah.
She could be helping Carson in this as well.
She could be mending that as well.
But so she brings it to Isabel and says, you know, I think that you should help this guy. And she says, I don't think it's my place to help him. And Mrs. Hughes says something to the effect of, I never in a zillion years, I'm sure she didn't say zillion, would have heard you say something like that.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten I had any energy or kindness in me.
Yeah. And that was nice to know that she still does. And for me, I have to say that Isabel's storyline and the way that it was conveyed in the actress and the whole thing, Penelope, I just thought that was way more emotional for me than the Mary storyline and how she was dealing with her grieving, because just the way she was doing it was just, she still had such, I don't even, elegance about the way she was doing it, but you could see the pain and it was so deep and everything like that. And the line she was saying is, you know, when you lose your only child, you're no longer a mother. Mm-hmm. You're no longer anything. Mm-hmm. And she's just dealing with that. It was just brutal to hear the way she was feeling about that.
And it was, as you say, the way the actress portrayed it was just so devastating.
Yeah.
I mean, you really got it, especially because we've seen her in contrast as being sort of, you know, chipper, stiff upper lip with people in the past.
And nothing gets her down, and she's always, you know, going to get out there and, you know, charge up the hill and take on anything. And this, she's just gutted.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was just devastated to watch her because I just wanted to say, and I was thinking, no one is going to be able to help her out of this. Who's going to go?
No, because she's the one.
Yeah,
she's the one who saves everyone else.
Exactly, and it was great to see. I mean, obviously, Lady Edith tried to help out and stuff, and even in that scene, you could see that Lady Edith was doing her best and everything, but it was just, Isabel wasn't having any of it. But the touch that she, you know, how sweet it was and stuff. And it was great that Mrs. Hughes figured out, you know, it's always that case when you're feeling horrible, just do something for somebody else.
Well, and they're kind of counterpoints, not counterpoints, but you know, the similar person in their two communities.
Realms.
So, exactly.
The cast,
Mrs. Hughes for the downstairs and Mrs. Crawley for the upstairs, kind of the, you know, the champion of the downtrodden, both of them. And so it was nice that they were able to bring it together. Because they've done that before when they were helping, you know, the
former maid. Hello.
You know, the gal who had fallen upon difficult times. Yeah. They came together to help her. And so this was another opportunity. I just thought it was a really beautiful moment throughout.
It was. So we don't know the whole story between Mr. Grieg.
I think Mr. Grieg is going to create some serious trouble down the road.
Well, he'll have to. Why else bring him in? We got to stir up the pot, you know.
I also thought this just sort of struck me that Isabel said, I've drawn you a bath. You know, here's a lady who's very, you know, cultured and all that.
Yeah.
Drew a bath for this.
Yeah, but she's smelly guy. So much into the whole.
No, I know she's not.
Strata.
I know she's not. But I just thought that was interesting thing for me. And I thought it was, you know, a little like washing feet.
Right.
You know,
that was a moment of
humility and opportunity to connect with people.
And we got to see a little bit about what the workhouses, the Dickensian workhouses were.
Yes.
We didn't see a lot of them, but we got a little bit of it. And I also think that this may be an opportunity for us to see more of how Carson used to be. I'm hoping that we'll get to see another side of him that we don't get to see, because then, you know, it'll be interesting to see where he came from and what he became.
I'm just looking forward to a tap number.
You want to see a Carson song and dance? Is that what you're looking for?
I am. Just real quickly, I know we went over the scene, but I just want to go through the lines of it. Mm-hmm. I don't see if it as being any of my business, says Isabel.
Yeah.
That's something I never thought I'd hear you say. And Isabel says, I don't think I'm strong enough. And Mrs. Hugh says, you are, if you could set aside your grief to help another. And that is the best way to get out of one's own way, is to help someone else.
Yeah, exactly.
So I thought that was a very wise moment, and something I believe in as well, personally. So.
And even, you know, the Dowager tried to help Isabel. They had their little scene together. But that leads into our Mosley thing. So we might as well talk Mosley. And I was just thinking of Mosley, you know, the poor sad sack Mosley. He never gets a break.
We
always call poor Edith. And this is like poor Mosley. He just can't catch a break either. He's obviously lost a job for obvious reasons, he says. And you know,
and 6 months later, still looking for one.
Yeah, and you know, he's kind of worn out the generosity of the Granthams, because they've been putting allowing him to stay, and now, you know, but it's the Dowager that comes to his rescue to some. And I'm going, well, that's interesting too. You got the Dowager going to help Mosley. You got Isabel trying to help Mr. Grieg, and they're all using these things to, in some way, deal with the grief of Matthew. Because, you know, when you can't control those things, you try to do something that you can control.
Right.
Or at least, you know, move it along and stuff.
So. Well, and also just get off of your own
self. Exactly. Get out of your own. Yeah. That kind of thing. So I thought that was nice. And of course, Mosley, it turns out horrible at Lady Shackleton's. the luncheon is terrible. Nothing goes right because
that rat.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But somebody's trying to take his job. He's interested in job security, just like Mrs. Patmore is. She doesn't like the mixer because she's job security.
I know.
Yeah, so, you know, there you go. But I just, you know, the buffoon that and he's not really a buffoon, but he's hapless, and it's kind of fun. He's the little comedic diversion that Mosley is was nice. But he had some really nice moments with his father. I thought that was nice.
Yes.
It was tender.
It was really sweet to see him.
Yeah, it was. It was nice. Because, you know, exactly. I love the way that Mr. Mosley was
senior.
Was senior when he was meeting with the Dowager. He was tipping his hat, but the hat wasn't there. So
he was tipping his bangs. Fringe.
Exactly.
As they would say,
maybe that's what they did all the time. You don't wear a hat. You know,
sure.
Yeah. But it's just so funny. It looked like he was grabbing his hair.
It's a little like a salute,
it was cute.
You know?
It was. Yeah. It was nice. And stuff. All right. But so let's go on Lady Edith.
Yeah. Let's talk about Edith.
Because, you know, we just talked about poor Mosley, but here we have poor Edith. So, you know, she's obviously get the Valentine. You're keeping the Michael Gregson romance going, and it was furthered here because she met him in London. They were at the
Criterion
meeting literary people and
the party first,
yeah, the
right?
Party first,
yeah.
And
in the fancy red outfit.
And my God, they almost kissed there, and she's getting steamy with Lady Edith.
And then later at the Criterion, they kiss in public. Yeah, she's talking about, I would never have gone out. Mother said we couldn't eat in public.
Yeah.
A few years ago, and now I'm eating in public.
I'm showing off my ankles,
and I'm kissing a man.
And he's married.
Wow,
the things that are happening—it's just crazy.
I want to call her a harlot,
but
not
an orgy.
Really.
It's debauchery.
But so he says to her, "I got it all figured out. I have a plan. I'm gonna go." You said it earlier when we were talking about this.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go where?
I'm going to go to Germany and become a Nazi.
And then we can marry.
I know. Obviously, he didn't say Nazi, but that's just where I took it. So he just came out of World War I, the hated race of the Germans, and now he's going to go there. So
right.
He's
she, says,
divorce.
She says, you'd become a member of the most hated race in Europe for me?
For me. And I'm going, yeah, that shows how much he loves you, but poor Edith.
Poor. I'm not so sure this is a great trade.
I know. I mean, first she stuck with the old guy with the arm and, you know, jilted at the altar, and then, okay, so the next guy is married, his wife's in roughly an insane asylum.
Ay-yi-yi.
And he's going to go to Germany and become a citizen so that he can divorce his wife, and then finally they can be together.
How do you think that's going to play out? We sometimes talk predictions early, but let's just do that. I mean,
well, it's not going to be good or easy because
they're not going to go. Downton Abbey is not going to go to Germany. I think we can say that pretty clearly.
Well, I don't know. Maybe they will just to do that whole thing. And, you know, it's kind of a spoiler, but we know that, you know, Lady Edith is going to blossom and she's going to be more in the flapper kind of.
Right. Independent woman stretching her wings
exactly.
Kind of deal.
She's going to be, she's going to get into the literati, so to speak, become a writer of some note, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows how far they're going to take that. Will that go? I don't know if they'll go to Germany or anything, but whatever it is, I mean, it's going to be great for Lord Grantham. He's going to freak. he had a hard enough time with her last bow. This is going to be great.
Well, and he is doing the sidelong glances whenever Grayson is brought
happy.
Up. He's Gregson, sorry. Yeah. He's, you know, people will be talking about him, and then there's Lord Grantham.
Yeah, that's, oh, yeah, he's just
sort of throwing scorn across the room.
She can do better.
Mm-hmm. You know?
But every father thinks that of his, well, not every, but most fathers think that of their daughter.
True,
surely
true.
Your father did. So, anyway, so what are they going to do? I don't know how they're going to run out.
Well, what I was going to say was I don't think that Downton Abbey's going to, oh, actually, to preface this, how long does he have to be in Germany in order to, we don't
become
know
a
that,
citizen. Yeah,
to become a citizen. It's not something you can do in a week, I would assume.
Yeah, and is he going to move his wife there too, or is just he, I mean, it's all.
Right, how does that work? So I don't, the machinations of it, I don't think are going to be easy to do within the constraints of this show.
And it won't make good TV to do all
And it's
that
not good TV. So, you know, a little like Carson being in prison.
Yeah,
Bates. Excuse me, beg your pardon, Bates being in prison. Thank you. I'm just going to make a prediction, and I think we're going to be talking about poor Edith again.
Of course.
Those of you who may not have seen our podcast before, because we have been coinciding with the U.S. Broadcast in the past, poor Edith was my hashtag
for her
name wasn't Edith. It was poor Edith because she was always.
Poor All right, so that's our last little thing was the of course, the Valentine's notes that Ivy gets. And, you know, I'm sorry, that Daisy gets, and we learn, of course, it's not from Jimmy.
It's from Mrs. Patmore.
So she doesn't have an admirer, but she does
have
a friend.
And,
you know, again, just these little moments that was just peppering throughout. They were just, you know, I just like the way they do them.
What about Ivy getting drunk?
I know. Whoa. And, of course, Jimmy's at fault. You know, Jimmy's kind of, I don't know, he's a loose cannon, too. He's just kind of, let's just go out. Yeah.
He's it's a like, pot stirrer.
Yeah, pot stirrer. Yeah,
a little
absolutely.
Bit.
Absolutely. And then, like, what? I didn't know what was going to happen. Like, you can't see around the corner.
Right?
Like, that wasn't going to happen.
Right.
So.
And then the mixer.
Oh, yeah.
With Mrs. Hughes and Mrs. Patmore. Yeah. Sweet, cute, fun.
All right.
Love it. Want to talk some news?
Yeah, because I think we've exhausted what we can about the episode. Now we'll get into some news.
All right. There was an article in The Telegraph.
Mm-hmm. A reputable source, right?
About, gosh, I've just lost it. Sorry. Okay. No, that was my last one. Okay. This episode was 96 minutes long.
Oh, yeah, no, it was 90 minutes long.
Stretched to 2 hours. Due to commercials.
It was 67 minutes worth of actual screen time and 23
minutes of commercials.
Yeah.
So it has been dubbed.
It was a 90-minute thing that was 67 minutes worth of actual screen time.
So people have been dubbing it Downton Addy.
For all the commercials.
Yes.
Too many commercials.
Too many commercials. Lots of people
Downton
coming
Addy.
Out on Twitter talking about how terrible it was to be listening to all these commercials. The show was very nice and small snippets between ads.
But, you know, this is nothing new because they had the same complaint last year. I mean, and of course, ITV came out and said, like, there are no more commercials here than there have been for other 90-minute broadcasts. But I don't know. It seemed like everybody was not happy with that part
no.
of it. It was like, it was nice to watch Downton Abbey between the commercials. There was
right.
way too many commercials, and there was just a little bit of Downton Abbey. So, who knows? They're angry about it.
Downton Addy.
Downton Addy, not happy with
Next
that.
Week's episode is 1 hour and 5 minutes.
Well, that's what the running time is. Who knows how many
commercials.
Yeah,
well,
so it'll probably be only 44 minutes after you take the commercials out. So
that's a little horrifying.
Yeah.
We'll be watching. We'll be watching to see. This was the article from The Telegraph. Michelle Dockery talking about the ladylike world of Downton Abbey rubbing off on the female stars. Mm. She says that when she was in a restaurant with Laura Carmichael, who plays poor Edith, the two of them sat with their hands clasped when they weren't eating, which is
in their lap?
The proper way. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's the, you know, either your hands are engaged in something. If they're not, they sit hands clasped.
As opposed to like I'm with,
like we're sitting like
elbows,
this.
Elbows on the table.
And someone noticed it and pointed it out, and she said, well, that's, you know, that's Downton Abbey seeping into my real life. So maybe something has rubbed off, she said.
Ooh.
And she said, a quote was, there's one thing, I do feel nostalgic about that kind of femininity. Mm-hmm. So the idea that, you know, I hate this term, but I'm going to use it because it's traditional, the weaker sex, you know, the ladies being.
Well, back in that time, that was considered.
That was tradition at the time.
The more demure side of everything.
Right, exactly. And the other thing she says is that she likes that she, in referring to the fashion, there's nothing gratuitous about it. You never see any flesh. And she says, but then I've never been the sort of girl who shows off my curves. So she seems very suited to the life. And so, I mean, obviously that's why they cast her.
She didn't have a lot of
curves to show off in the first place.
Exactly. She's a lovely young lady, but she's just not very curvy. That's
also, speaking to those other times, the Countess of Carnarvon,
yes, the actual
who
Countess
lives at Highclere Castle, she has a new blog that's out, and it came out about, I'm going to say about a month ago, maybe six weeks ago. Talks a little bit, little snippets about life at Carnarvon. She talks about, you know, when she was out getting muddy, walking the dogs recently, that sort of thing. It's delightful to read, so if you get a chance, read that.
So but a Countess blog?
Yeah, the Countess of Carnarvon has a blog.
Wow.
She said that she does admire the slower pace of life, but enjoyed modern conveniences and the egalitarian mentality too much to go back to the time.
Oh, she likes the slower pace of the Downton Abbey days as opposed to nowadays. Is that what
she likes the slower pace, but she likes the modern conveniences.
Right, of course, she does.
Her quote was, "Doctors and dentists today, I much prefer, and I love washing machines."
There you go.
The words of the Countess.
From the Countess. Like,
herself.
Oh, she actually uses a washing
machine? I think she actually does some laundry on occasion.
That's
you know,
good to know.
If you can't find the butler at that moment, you got to do a load yourself. Yeah, so there you go.
Okay. So
and that is our news.
That's our news.
For
great.
Tonight.
Okay. So we got any predictions?
You're after Buzz TV.
I've sort of let a lot of mine leak out as we went. You were good at keeping yours, so why don't you start with yours, and I'll see if anything else comes.
This isn't really my prediction. It's just a spoiler alert to some degree. I mean, it's not really a spoiler. They let it out, so it's the makers, Julian Fellowes, has talked about it, that Branson is going to have a love interest as well. The new nanny, apparently, is going to be...
The new nanny. I actually didn't know that.
Yeah. So,
oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
I have not been reading my UK newspapers, clearly.
So, I forgot the actress's name. I don't remember her name.
It's okay.
Yeah. So I think it's actually Daisy. Anyway, that's a real name. But I don't know the character name because I don't know that it's been released. So I couldn't find it. But anyway, so the new nanny apparently is going to be a love interest, which I think is going to play
Branson,
into the whole Edna thing.
Oh, it is. That's going to be good.
So we have the love triangle. So apparently Edna, who is the
lady's maid.
Lady's maid is going to be vying for Branson, where we think she will because she did prior series. And he's not going to have any of it because he's going to be interested in the nanny.
Well, you know, one of the things we don't know about this show is that they or we do know is that they make great leaps in time. So,
yeah, sometimes
you know, the next episode could be, you know, a long time down the road.
Could be, yeah.
So, and we do know that Mary gets a love interest as well. But so I just, you know, I want to reiterate that I think poor Edith is going to be crushed once again.
Yeah, I mean.
But here's what I think is going to happen. Yeah. I think that she is going to redeem herself through her work.
Oh, she's going to find her.
I think she's going to really, exactly, blossom and find fulfillment through work and, you know, her brains, which I think fits along perfectly with what's going on in society
in
the time. And she doesn't need a man and she doesn't need to, you know, live this cloistered life of a lady of leisure. She's going to become something
and
important.
And maybe rather than following the path of marriage or whatever, she's going to say, screw it. You don't need to be divorced. We'll just have a long affair. Who knows? Maybe she'll, I don't know. Maybe that's
I think that's
going
possible. I think that's absolutely
because
possible.
Because that would be interesting right there because that would certainly show some sort of, well, if you call it progression or not, but that would be kind of mark that kind of change.
Mm-hmm.
And also I think it would be interesting speaking to about the other female, the other sister, Mary. So she's going to, as I mentioned before, I think she's going to step into more of a leadership role in terms of the Downton and how it's run and all that stuff.
Right.
And the ideas that she championed or that Matthew championed, she might further – and obviously her own ideas as well. But I think it's going to be interesting because this will be the first working mother that we'll see on Downton.
Nice.
Because, you know, we don't really see that kind of thing, but she'll be the working mother.
Right.
From in 1922.
I like that idea.
So there you go.
You know, I want to encourage our listeners and viewers to comment and rate on iTunes, but also comment on YouTube and let us know your thoughts.
Yeah, let us know what you think is going to happen or how you liked the story arcs or what you think is going to happen with what character and where you'd like to see the show go or where you don't want it to go.
Yeah, because I love reading those things. I love reading the tweets because I do get tweets from a couple people in the UK, and it's always fun to read those, and we'll talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely, because anything that we find interesting that we can't come or we didn't come up with, we want to know what you guys come up with so we can talk about it.
Absolutely.
So we always say we want to start the conversation here. We'd love for you guys to continue it so that we can, when next time we meet, we'll have that as part of our show.
Yeah.
So thank you very much for listening. Tell everybody where they can find you and teach you.
Oh, on Twitter, I am at Tamara Berg, TamaraBerg. Also, my website is TamaraCentral.com.
Yes, and Marissa, if they want to get in contact with you or find anything about AfterBuzz.
I'm on Twitter at Serafini TV. That's SERAFINI.
And of course, you can always go to AfterBuzzTV.com and let us know whatever you want or have any questions about the show at all.
Yeah,
you can't find me anywhere. You can't follow me anywhere, but I will be here next week. And we will talk to you next time.
Yes,
thanks for listening.
Thanks for being with us.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.